CFAC 960 AM. Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Live from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Owned by Rogers Media. Listen live anywhere at sportsnet.ca/960 or on the Sportsnet app. Steinberg, Kerr, The Big Show on Sportsnet 960. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave.
Well, that truly was something else at the Rogers Centre last night. While we were sitting here at the Scotiabank Saddledome watching the Flames and Edmonton Oilers play in preseason action, we also were keeping our eye on what was a wild one at the Rogers Centre. We had 12 runs scored in total, including 6 runs scored in the ninth inning, 4 by the Yankees, 2 for the Jays. Oh yeah, and before all of those fireworks in the ninth inning, we had to have some fireworks of a different kind in the second inning.
And now Hap drills him. Drills him in the back with a 91-mile-an-hour pitch. So Headley is hit. Here come the Yankees out of their first base dugout. Here come the Blue Jays out of their dugouts. The bullpen's empty in left and right center. And all hands are on deck between the plate and first base. A sea of white and blue and gray and black. Back-to-back pitches at Headley. Jay got him the second time. And Joe, you're exactly right, going back to Donaldson and that pitch right there at the elbow. The pitch hit him. He's drilled, and now he's gone. And now here comes Severino. He's grabbed by his catcher. The Yankees and Blue Jays are in a brawl between the plate and the mound. Here come the bullpens. Gloves are flying. Fists are flying. Everybody's shoving one another. And the swarm of players now has moved behind home plate. The entire dirt infield around the home plate area there has been covered by a sea of humanity, the Blue Jays and Yankees. And now it looks like things are finally starting to settle down.
Yeah, finally they settled down until the ninth inning where there were fireworks of a different kind. But in the end, the Jays end up falling last night 7-5 at the hands of the Yankees. They were unable to sweep that four-game series. But what about the benches clearing twice? Manager John Gibbons says the Jays, they're tired of getting targeted.
Team's been taking pot shots at us, man, for you know all year long, and you know some guys just got tired of it. I think is what happened, and I thought the umpires handled it the right way, and you know you move on from there. But we got some pretty good hitters in that lineup, and you know you don't like seeing them get hit. That's for sure.
That was something else yesterday. That game had everything at the Rogers Center. It's too bad the Jays were unable to go 4-for-4 against the Yankees. But from a strictly entertainment perspective, it kind of had everything you're looking for as a baseball fan.
It was pretty crazy. But I think, going back all the way to that first time where Donaldson got hit and then Hap went to retaliate. And I get that, you know, Donaldson maybe wasn't hit intentionally. I don't know if he was thrown at intentionally. And then I think that, you know, this probably could have all been stopped if Jay Hap was tossed out of the game, because I think it was ridiculous to see him throw behind Headley and then throw and nail him and not get kicked out of the game. But that's besides the point. It was a weird game, and you did see a little bit of everything, including a blown save. But if you were looking at that game as a baseball fan and you're looking for something, you got just about everything in that game last night.
You sure did. So the Jays take 3 of 4 from the Yankees. They've won 7 of their last 11, and now they get set for a difficult and crucial final 6-game stretch of the season, because not only are they fighting tooth and nail for a playoff spot, they're also, for the next 3 games specifically, Will, fighting against the team that is right there with them for one of those playoff spots. Now, there's 2 wild card spots available. Obviously, the one you want is the first one, because then you get home field for the wild card play-in game. Right now, the Jays have got a 1-game lead on the Orioles for that first of the 2 wild card spots, and the Jays and Orioles kick off a 3-game set at Rogers Center tonight. I know that we would have all liked the final 3 games of the season to mean something and to be for the American League East between the Jays and the Red Sox. It looks like that's not going to be something that's going to happen, but I guess the next best thing from a drama perspective, Jays and Orioles with a game between them and with a wild card spot potentially on the line, this next 3-game set sure does shape up to be something pretty special. And I'm not saying I'm not feeling confident, Will, but I can't sit here and say that I'm feeling supremely confident either. I mean, these teams have been so close all year long. Could the Jays take 2 of 3 and up their lead? For sure they can, but I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that they win this series. I'm nervous heading into these final six games because even a wild card spot is far from being sewn up right now.
Yeah, and they are in a good spot, which is probably something you're feeling a little bit more comfortable at going into this series with the Orioles. If they were tied, it might be making you a little bit more nervous. But because they have that one game lead, you're feeling pretty confident heading in. The only thing too, Pat, the one thing we do got to remember is there's a good chance these two teams will play four times in the next 10 days because Baltimore and Toronto could go head-to-head next Wednesday or Thursday in the wildcard games, or Tuesday, Wednesday, whenever they are. But you know, you can get a lot of intel on your opponent here, and I think these are some crucial games in this week to not only lock up that home field for the one-game wildcard play-in, but also to get some information on your opponents and perhaps maybe put a seed of doubt in their minds if you're able to go out there for three games in a row and beat them on your home field, and then they realize they got to come back to Toronto next week to play you in a one-game playoff.
Yep.
You can do some pretty positive things here over the next three games, but you're right, because it is so tight, it makes for some nervous times for the next 6 days for Blue Jay fans.
So one game separates these teams. Blue Jays, Orioles, Rogers Center tonight, 5:07 first pitch on Sportsnet 1. Aaron Sanchez on the mound. A very crucial series starting tonight in Toronto. Welcome to the Big Show on this Tuesday afternoon. My name is Pat Steinberg. His name is Will Nault. It's Flames game day from the MTS Center tonight. Calgary Flames, Winnipeg Jets. Preseason game number 3 goes at 6 o'clock. More on that game in just a few minutes because some interesting storylines from this game following Calgary's preseason debuts last night against the Edmonton Oilers. Before we get there, though, it's also Team Canada game day. The World Cup final starts tonight. And, Will, I got to say, like, the more I've thought about this, the more I've had to ruminate on the fact that Team Europe is going to take on Team Canada since Sunday's semifinal win for them over Sweden. Sometimes when you have a little bit of time, you start to think like, okay, you know what? Maybe Europe does have a chance. Maybe there is the chance that this can be interesting. Well, the time between the semifinals and the World Cup final starting tonight has gone the opposite way for me. The more I've thought about it, the less chance I give Europe. I cannot see any way that Europe makes this even interesting. I know that they've played tight hockey, and they've been able to pull off some upsets, and you know the Swedes were heavily favored and all that type of stuff, but knowing what happened in the final round robin game between Canada and Europe, knowing what I've seen from both these teams throughout, I'm not saying Canada's going to win each game 6-0 like they did against the Czech Republic, but I have become even less or it's become even less likely in my mind that there is a potential Game 3 of this series the more I've thought about it. Like, this just seems like such a walk for Team Canada. Am I being, like, overly dismissive or too dismissive of Team Europe? Am I not showing them enough respect when I say something like that? Because it really has nothing to do with them. It has everything to do with, I just don't think any team touches Canada right now.
Yeah, and it's really hard for me to disagree with you, Pat. I think that you're not being too harsh on Team Europe, and I think that you go back to when they beat Sweden in overtime in semifinal number 2, they were thinking, okay, yeah, you know what, maybe they're not so bad. And then they lose Marian Gaborik to an injury, which hurts and doesn't help their chances against Canada in terms of scoring depth. And the other thing too, Pat, that I think the only chance Europe has to compete and to stay with Canada is goaltending. But at the same time, Halak's had a great tournament, but he's not Carey Price. So, not disrespecting Yaroslav Halak, and he's had a great tournament. He's probably led them to this point. But Canada is just deeper up front, deeper on the back end, and better in net. And I think overall, Europe's going to try and shut you down. But the trouble with Canada is they can play any style of game you want.
Exactly. Like, I'm just as comfortable with Canada playing the brand of hockey Europe wants to play. Did we not see the Olympics in Sochi? Like, Canada wasn't blowing teams out in Sochi. They scored the goals that they needed to. Most times, one goal was enough because they had Carey Price, who wasn't going to let anything past him, and they locked things down to such a ridiculously efficient way that even if they had you or I playing goal, they probably still had a chance to win hockey games. Man. So, like, it was I'm just saying, like the goaltender is good.
Well,
as
I know. I just
was.
Think I think you're being too, you're being too nice about my goaltending skills. I don't know, Pat.
Yeah, maybe I'm pumping our goaltending skills a little bit too much. But like as good as Carey Price was in that tournament,
yeah.
He also didn't have to do much against Sweden and the United States in those final two mm-hmm. games. So to your point, Canada can steamroll right over mm-hmm. you if that's the game you want to play. But if you wanna buckle it down and make it a far more defensive and mistake-free game, Canada's going to beat you at that game, too.
Yeah, and look, I would love for this thing to be close, and I would love to be here pumping Europe's tires and believing that they have a chance. And not to sound arrogant or cocky when talking about Team Canada, it's just I think going back to the Olympics in Vancouver to what we saw in Sochi, the last best-on-best tournaments, you're just seeing such a good era of Canadian hockey. And I just don't know if the juggernaut can be stopped by a team made up of eight different countries. And they've had a great tournament, but I just don't know if that's enough to beat Canada in a best of three.
How you doing back there? We're both under the weather. I'm here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. Flames practiced today here, but they're also a different group of players is playing in Winnipeg tonight. Flames and Jets at 5 o'clock. So I'm here at 6 o'clock rather. I'm here at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. I'll be making my way back to the studio in the next little while. I'm under the weather, have been for a little while. Will makes me sound like the picture of health, however. How you doing? Like, do you feel better than you sound?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. It's just a lot of sinus issues right now. Not so okay. much the throat, more of the sinus variety.
Yeah, I feel bad for you because you can tell that you're fighting something right there. Couple of texts at 960-960 before we move on to our next topic, and that is the Flames and Jets tonight. Blue Jays, not Jays. I think I don't think that we're being disrespectful by calling them the Jays once in a while. Lots of people, they used to have jerseys that just said Jays on them. I think that they're okay with us not calling them the Blue Jays all the time. So we can put that to rest. The more I think about the World Cup as a whole, the more disappointed I feel for not getting Team Canada versus Team North America. It's true. Like, that would have been so incredible if we could have seen even one, let alone a best of three final between those two teams. But as you've said before, Will, they tried to kind of telegraph a Canada-United States final, and that didn't really work out for them.
Yeah.
So you can't really telegraph these things. They just have to happen. So, you know, 4 years from now, if they do this again, and they're like, well, we need Canada versus North America if they run the same format, hey, you're probably going to have that backfire on you mm-hmm. because you have no control of things once the puck drops.
Yeah, and who knows what the next format looks like. Apparently, Gary Bettman was asked about that today in Toronto while holding the Centennial Press Conference, where he announced a bunch of details for the 2017 calendar year where the NHL will celebrate 100 years. And he didn't really elaborate on terms of what that format might look like next time around if there is indeed another World Cup. So who knows what it will look like, Pat? The one thing I will say, though, is if Team Europe, you know, they made the final, I don't think they're going to win it. But at this point, I think it's kind of hard to go away from a Team Europe, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to end up being,
like,
you know,
wouldn't you rather have this team than a Switzerland or a Denmark?
If you're gonna be running a World Cup like this, yeah, absolutely. I'd much rather have teams that are better than, you know, just straight. Like, I have no problem with the format they've run. I don't think you could ever, like, you never want this in the Olympics. Obviously, you couldn't do it in the Olympics, but for a made for television event like the World Cup of Hockey, I'm all for this. I think it's awesome. I think it's somewhat justification or vindication that Team Europe's now two wins away from winning the World Cup. As unlikely as we all believe that's going to be, they're still two wins away from winning the World Cup. They're closer to it mm-hmm. than every other team other than Canada.
Yeah.
So,
Mike Babcock was also asked about the World Cup format. He said next year, I'm curious to get your take on this, Pat, but he said next time around he would like to see it played in two different cities and have all night games. I don't know.
He also wants all national teams. He doesn't want hybrid or combined teams. I would like to see it in more than two cities. I think that, you know, do an east-west. Do one,
a West Division,
one pool in... Yeah, like do one pool in Montreal and Ottawa and do the other in Calgary and Vancouver. Or, you know, do Canada and the United States. Do one pool in, you know, Western Canada. Do the other pool in Tampa Bay and Buffalo. You know, or maybe that's not smart, but Buffalo and New York or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of different ways they could do it. I think bringing it back, having not done it for 12 years, logistically it was easier to do it in Toronto. I understand that. But I think next time, do it in more venues so you can have night games and all-night games. Because, I don't think the afternoon games were a huge success. That's the way I'm with Mike Babcock in that respect. I don't know if you need to have all-national teams. But, I think that if you were to do it again to have it in a couple of different venues, I think that would be kind of interesting.
Yeah, and obviously that's why you had some of the pre-tournament games in Pittsburgh and in Washington and things like that. But now you could have actually tournament games there, and I think there's a good opportunity to spread the love, if you will, when it comes to host cities. And I think there's a lot of opportunity for Canada and the U.S. and in North America, I guess, as a whole to do that. And I believe in 2004, did they not have the Europe pool playing
all over the place? They had games in Europe, and they had games all over North America too, like in Montreal, in Toronto. I think they had games in Columbus and a couple of, they had games everywhere. I know they did the pre-tournament games this time around in different cities, but I'd like to see the actual tournament games played different places. Anyway, we don't even know if there's going to be another World Cup. We think there will be, but as of right now, we got a World Cup final tonight. Game one, Canada, Europe. It goes at 6 o'clock, live on 660 News. They will have coverage for you tonight as we've got the Flames and the Jets. Speaking of the Flames, they fall 2-1 here at the Scotiabank Saddledome last night, 4-2 at Rogers Place in Edmonton in split squad action last night. Before we get into lineups this evening, just observations from last night. You and I both watched the game from basically the same vantage point yesterday, Will. I thought that Sam Bennett was the best player on the ice for either team. Mm-hmm. A very astute gentleman named him the number one star last night, even though he didn't have any points. I thought Sam Bennett was the best player on the ice last night. I thought he was creating offensively. He was distributing the puck well. He made scoring chances happen. And I thought the combo of him and Brouwer together, Tkachuk looked good too, but specifically the combo of Brouwer and Bennett together, I think the Flames might have something there, and I thought they looked really, really good as a combo, and Bennett individually, I thought he was stellar last night.
Yeah, and I think that obviously helps having them two together for, you know, the entire time from the beginning of training camp until now in the game action, and Glenn Gullitson had indicated that you know what? Chemistry doesn't grow overnight, so you got to give these guys some time. And I thought for their first game together last night, Sam Bennett and Troy Brouwer were terrific together. And Bennett looks like he's stronger. He's bigger than last season. I think putting him at center is great. And if you're looking at expectations for this season, I know it's only the first game of the preseason, but Sam Bennett was terrific last night for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, he was really, really good. Brouwer looked good. Flames don't score a lot, but it's the preseason. There's lots of time to worry about results. Last night was not a time to worry about results. Also thought, in our first look at him in his new surroundings, I thought that Brian Elliott looked just fine. I thought he was poised. I thought that he battled. He made the saves he needed to make. I thought Brian Elliott was just fine last night. Didn't allow a goal in his two periods of work. Love the pads. And seeing them in game action with the red jersey, love the pads. But I just thought, Elliott was really, really strong last night.
Yeah, he's a sharp-dressed man in those red pads. And I think that he's going to be a good, solid force back there for this team all year long, and Lou said it best at noon in his hit with us in Hockey Central. It just looked like a much more calm presence back there. Was able to control the play, get the puck to the defenseman. I thought he played the puck pretty well for a goaltender. I know that he's not historically a great puck handler, but last night he was okay. And if you're a Flames fan, you got to be happy with what you saw from Brian Elliott last night. I thought he was great, and it's only two periods and the first game of the preseason, so that's a huge positive for the Calgary Flames.
Yeah, and again, whether you thought somebody didn't look good last night or thought somebody looked great last night, you don't take too much from game one of the preseason. You can't make any definitive judgments at this point, but there were some positives. I thought Sam Bennett, Troy Brower, and Brian Elliott led the way when it came to the positives last night for the Flames. Tonight, 6 o'clock face-off at the MTS Center in Winnipeg. Will, I dare say this is not what you're going to call the most big name laden lineup. This is a very nondescript group that'll be playing in Winnipeg. Here's how it's going to look. Up front, Mark Jankowski will center Michael Ferland and Lori Korpikoski. You'll have Freddie Hamilton playing with Lance Boma and Garnet Hathaway. Lyndon Vey between Luke Adam and Emile Poirier. And Mike Angelides will play between Andrew Mangiapane and Hunter Smith. That's how the forwards look. On the back end, pairs are Culkin and Morrison, Kanzig and Dykov, Grossman and Roback. And Chad Johnson will get the start in net. So Johnson gets his first start as a member of the Flames. But in terms of Flames regulars from last season, there are two, Ferland and Boma. Everybody else was not a part of this team or a very bit part of this team last year. So Ferland and Boma are the only two regulars from last year playing in this game tonight. Johnson starts in net. Rittich will back him up. And the Jets aren't going with much better of a lineup. They will not have guys like Laine, Little, Wheeler, Scheifele, Bufflin, Myers, Enstrom, all those guys not playing tonight. So you hear that, you're like, oh, that's not a very good lineup. But, Will, I take a look at it. I find lineups like this in the preseason to be even more interesting because a Korpikoski, a Jankowski, a Vey, a Hathaway, Roback, Grossman, these are guys trying to make an impact and trying to stick around. And I find, you know, these are the games where you can really evaluate position battles and some of those depth chart battles a little bit better. So I don't mind the fact that the Flames aren't really icing a really veteran-laden lineup tonight.
Yeah, and I think the other thing, too, to remember, too, Pat, in that lineup tonight for the Flames is some of those guys, like the Jankowskis, for an example, or you know, even the Lyndon Vey's to an extent, and you know, Nicholas Grossman. Some of these guys, especially Jankowski, playing a back-to-back at this level. I know it's not the regular season, but how can you respond in a back-to-back, a travel day? How do you react to that? I think that's very important, and we're going to see you're going to learn some things about some of these young players in the Flames tonight, and I think that's a good thing, and maybe it's easier to evaluate when they're playing against, you know, some of the similar type skilled players on the other side.
So puck drop at 6 o'clock. We'll be on the air at 5 o'clock with your Flames warm-up. Flames, Jets tonight, 6 o'clock face-off from the MTS Center in Winnipeg. We're about 2 weeks away from the start of the regular season. 2 weeks tomorrow is when the Flames and Oilers drop the puck for real at Rogers Place. You want to be there? You want to see the Flames take on the Oilers to open up the regular season in Edmonton? Oh, yeah, and be a part of the official unveiling of the brand-new Rogers Place. We've got your ticket. October 12th, Driving Force is sending you to Edmonton to watch the Flames and Oilers in Edmonton's home opener. And, of course, the opening of their new building. Driving Force Vehicle Rentals, Sales, and Leasing will put you behind the wheel of a sweet ride. Travel up the QE2 in style. You'll get tickets to the game, gas card, overnight accommodations, and more. Two locations in Calgary for Driving Force Vehicle Rentals, Sales, and Leasing. Corner of 23rd Avenue and Barlow Trail Northeast and 3660 50th Avenue Southeast. Also online at drivingforce.ca. Do we have a changing of the guard in the NFC South? Or are we jumping to conclusions 3 weeks into the NFL season? Jason Lackenfor is up next. He'll update us on that and a whole lot more. Big Show continues here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Audio on demand. Podcast. Streaming live. Calgary's only 24/7 all sports radio. Sportsnet.ca/960. The Big Show continues on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Brought to you by The Comedy Cave. Tickets always $10. If it's comedy you crave, come to The Cave.
Sportsnet 960's NFL insider Jason Lackenfora is brought to you by Shanks. Don't miss Thursday Night Football at Shanks North and Shanks South as the Cincinnati Bengals take on the visiting Miami Dolphins. Featuring 550 Bud Light mugs and Spolumbo sliders. Shanks Sports Grill, your NFL headquarters in Calgary.
Week 3 of the NFL season came to an end yesterday. Falcons take it to the Saints. 45-32 ends up being the final score as the Saints drop to 0-3 to start the season. Welcome back to the Big Show. Pat Steinberg along with you. Time to welcome in from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com our NFL insider, Jason Lackenfora. Mr. Lackenfora, happy Tuesday. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How's everything up there in Calgary?
We are doing wonderful up here. It's hockey season. Everybody's focused on that, and the NFL is going on as well. So it's busy up here, man. What did you what'd you make of the Falcons last night? 45 points for Atlanta.
Yeah, you know, there was a lot going on last year, especially after their whatever it was 5-0 or 6-0 start between their offensive coordinator Kyle Shanahan and their quarterback Matt Ryan, and it wasn't particularly good. There was a lot of sort of dissension about how to run that offense and how much to ask him to bootleg. And, you know, he's not the most mobile a guy throwing on the run in some design situations. He was not very good in his red zone or the other team's red zone last year. There was a lot of questions. They certainly seemed to be simpatico yesterday, last night. I'll say that much. Didn't seem to be any issues there. Now, at least part of this, guys, is who they're facing. You know, the Saints, boy, oh, boy, not a good scene there. That defense has been disastrous for years, and it looks like they're every bit intent on being as bad as some of those Saints defenses of the past, maybe even worse. So I don't want to go crazy, you know what I mean, on like, yeah, look out for the Falcons, because the Saints have significant issues. I'm stunned that the Giants didn't expose them more in week two, but certainly the Raiders got them in week one, and Atlanta completely annihilated them last night, and that offense isn't nearly good enough to win the way they used to. You can't just think, well, we play a lot of games in our dome and somebody else's dome, and the weather's always going to be pretty good, and, you know, we'll just score 40 and they'll score 35 and we'll get a couple turnovers and we'll be okay, because that's not this offense anymore. And they haven't replaced Jimmy Graham. Fleener drops a lot of balls. Fleener's not what Jimmy Graham was in that offense. The offensive line's beat up. And the outside receivers, you know, Cooks is a speed guy, but they don't have anybody who you're really fearing as a matchup problem at all. You know, I think Mike Thomas will be a nice guy, you know, a nice possession receiver for them, but they're not as dynamic and explosive as they were. They got problems. They've got big problems. They are not going to win many football games. And, they locked into Drew Brees for one more year, but they're so far away that at a certain point, if you're going to be this bad, you know what I mean? Does it make more sense for you to be this bad developing a quarterback for the next 10 years rather than culling the final, you know, big throws out of a guy who is going to be well retired by the time you ever turn it around, if you turn it around?
So, if you take a look at this NFC South right now, because I'm completely with you on the Saints, so we kind of look at them as a non-factor. That leaves 1-2 Carolina, 1-2 Tampa Bay, and now you got this Falcons team that put up 45 last night. How do you read the NFC South? We're only 3 weeks in, so are the Panthers still the team to beat here? Has there been something that's happened that maybe has changed your mind a little bit? How do you look at the South?
No, I think it's still Carolina's to lose, and I think the team that we'll really look back on some of these early season stumbles, particularly the one they blew at home to L.A. last weekend, is the Bucs, because I thought that could be a playoff team. I thought that's a team who, if they beat the teams they should beat at home, could be there in the end. But they've had back-to-back weeks now where, after really kind of strutting their stuff over Atlanta, they got blown off the field by the Cardinals. And, I mean, the Rams almost put up 40 points on me. The Rams came into that game without an offensive touchdown, and the Bucs secondary couldn't get a stop. So I think that, you know, Atlanta is doing enough early to hang in there, but Carolina is going to win 9 or 10 games at least. I mean, they're banged up. I don't like their offensive line. I don't like Cam getting hit as much as he's being hit. I don't like a lot of what I've seen about out of that defense and the lack of a pass rush beyond sort of Coney Ealy, but that's not a good division. You know, that they've got a subsidy there. There's some teams around them that just won't be able to get out of their way when it really counts. And it's kind of like New England in the AFC East. You know, you're always waiting to see, well, who are these other teams? And could it be this team? And could it be that team? And mostly it's just nobody. And I think the Jets are very much like the Bucks. You know, they should be 3-0, at least 2-1. Instead, they're 1-2. And they've got Pittsburgh, Seattle, and Arizona coming up. If the Jets don't turn it around quickly, New England's going to have that division won by, like, Halloween. You know? I mean, that's just the reality. If New England spanks the Bills this weekend, they're going to have like a 3-game lead on everybody, and Tom Brady hasn't thrown a pass yet.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible that they sit 3-0 and have got the chance of going 4-0. Jason Lackenfor is with us, our NFL insider from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. Tuesdays and Fridays here on The Big Show on Sportsnet 96 of The Fan. So that's what happened last night. Falcons beat the Saints 45-32, and the Falcons right now on top of the NFC South. Switching gears a little bit on you, and what I think has been one of the pleasant surprises of the season, the Philadelphia Eagles, and talk about blowing a team out. They did just that to Pittsburgh at home on Sunday. Carson Wentz and the Eagles 3-0. So let me ask you this about the Eagles. Not a lot was expected of them coming into the season. Now Wentz has been one of the early season stories. They're unbeaten. Has your opinion on them changed, or is this just early season success that we see sometimes?
My opinion on them is starting to change. I was very high on their ability to be a much improved defense. I didn't think they'd be this airtight, but I thought they'd be improved. I thought Jim Schwartz, their defensive coordinator, would have such a great year that he sets himself up to be a head coach again, and that's looking to trend that way. I just didn't see this offense being this opportunistic. I looked at Darren Sproles and said, he can't be a feature back anymore. You know, he's getting up there. And Ryan Matthews is never healthy. You know, the tight ends, and the wide receivers can't catch. I mean, Aguilar, Matthews, they drop more than they hold on to. And then you couple that with a rookie quarterback who no one thought would be this good this soon, but even if you thought he came out of the gate firing and looking like a potential winning quarterback, given the lack of weapons around him, I thought it would be a little bit more of a struggle. And it will be a struggle at some point. And he's going to have bad games. He's going to have bad stretches. He's going to turn the ball over, and at some point he will be exposed some, and he will look like a rookie. But it may not happen until they feel like 5-1 or 6-1. And in that division, where I don't think anybody else is going to run away with it, they've gone from looking like a team in a rebuilding year where maybe they win 6 or 7 games, and you hope the kid quarterback peaks towards the end, and they really set themselves up for 2017, to now looking like, well, why can't they be the Redskins of last year? You know, where not much was thought of them. The quarterback achieves way more than you thought he could. The defense is better than expected, right? And they win a division. Why not?
Yeah, they've looked good so far, and you're right. Defensively, they have been airtight, and I did not see them having that much success against that Steelers offense on Sunday. That was something else, and Carson Wentz has turned into a really nice story too. What are we hearing? What are we hearing staying in the NFC? What are we hearing on Seattle and Russell Wilson? It sounds like good news for his status on Sunday.
Yeah, he wants to play. He's telling people he thinks he can play. That this injury is not as significant as the high ankle sprain he suffered 2 weeks ago, and he played on that high ankle sprain 6 days later when I don't know too many other people would have. So they got that thing treated pretty quickly during the game, you know, in real time on Sunday. They had the brace. They had him already in a brace, you know, Sunday afternoon. He'll be limited in practice, I'm sure. And look, if it's the going is rough out there against the Jets, and that Jets D-line can be pretty fearsome, and that Seattle offensive line is no great shake, so With a bye looming the following week, if it gets ugly out there, you know, they feel much more comfortable playing Boykin now, having seen him, you know, be very competent, albeit, look, with a huge lead and against a crappy 49ers team. But still, he got NFL action. He looked, you know, enough of the part that they feel a little bit comfortable. So they'll take precautions with Russell, but barring a setback, guys, I do expect him to start that game.
Jason, what's happening with Greg Hardy? And I know that he's in trouble with the law once again. So there's that part of it. And then there's is this for sure the end of his NFL career? Does he have a shot of returning at some point now that he's been charged with possession?
Let's see how this plays out. The culture has changed so much to a point where I'm never going to say never on domestic violence and to the extent of what was alleged against him. I'm never going to say never. But as he gets a year older and as he continues to associate with people who his employers, if he had them, would prefer he doesn't associate with, and as long as he's sort of living in this dreamland, this la-la land, where, you know, that despicable interview he did with ESPN actually hurt him way more than I think he and his agent Drew Rosenhaus would ever know. I mean, the way that was received around the league, sort of the lack of remorse, not being contrite, everything's being so faux and so staged. You know, owners at some point are sitting down to eat dinner with their wives, you know, and he would have been much better served keeping his mouth shut, maintaining a low profile, working his butt off in the gym, doing some community service, and he probably would have had a shot because he was 27, 28, and, you know, he's a pass rusher, and he's had some success. But that interview and then sort of some rumblings about bad behavior and then now this arrest, he's dug himself a massive, massive hole. I mean, this is a guy who was on the precipice, you know, when he was on that franchise tag in Carolina, of signing a deal that probably, you know, would have netted him $50 million guaranteed. Now, after subsequent behavior, he may have had to give back some of the signing bonus, but he's basically now a pariah. And yeah, this may be the death knell. But there are also desperate people in this league, and I don't know. Nothing's going to happen. He's not going to play this year. You know, in the next 9 months, does he completely rehabilitate himself and somebody's desperate for a pass rusher next September and he actually is in the community doing work and he has changed his mindset and he's doing the things that Ray Rice is actually doing now? Then because he's young enough and because he's a pass rusher, maybe. But it gets more bleak by the action.
He is Jason Lacanfora. He's our NFL insider from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com. One more for you. That's a look ahead to Thursday, 2 days away from Week 4 kicking off. Dolphins and Bengals. How do you see this one on Thursday night?
Well, this is something of a must-win to me for the Bengals now. I mean, they're home again, 2 games in 5 days. They have not been good, really, on either side of the ball. And frankly, they could be 0-3 very easy. They were manhandled by the Jets Week 1, and they won because of a missed field goal and a missed extra point and some Ryan Fitzpatrick stupidity in the red zone and one big pass to A.J. Green. But they don't have an identity on offense right now. They don't run the ball particularly well, and that one bomb over Revis's head to A.J. Green is the only touchdown that Andy Dalton's thrown to a wide receiver all year. The loss of Sanu and Jones has been significant. The loss of tight end Tyler Eifert, who may come back Thursday, probably more likely he comes back the following game, has been massive. The problem is he's missed a lot of time with a significant injury, and I don't think he comes right in and picks up right where he left off last year. And they get Vontaze Burfict back from suspension, but, you know, they're having issues covering people in the secondary. They look a little long in the tooth back there. They've lost a lot of players and a lot of coaches in a short period of time, and that tends to catch up with you. So I don't think they blow Miami out. I think Miami's defense may play better, you know, much more like it did the first 2 weeks than it did last week in Cleveland. But if Cincinnati does not win this game, they're not going to the playoffs. I don't think they're good enough in a tough division to come back from 1-3 and have the kind of success that they've had the last few years. So we're going to find out about them. Andy Dalton in prime time has not always been a thing of beauty. And I just wonder if they're a little tight. They know they can't afford to lose this game. We'll see whether that brings out the best in them or not.
Jason, you're the best. As always, appreciate it, man. We will talk to you again on Friday. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure as always, guys. Talk to you soon.
Jason Lacanfora, our NFL insider from CBS Sports and CBSSports.com, Mondays and Thursdays on the morning show, Tuesdays and Fridays on the big show. He's brought to you by Shank South, where you can not only watch every NFL game, but you're getting the best football watching experience in the city at Shanks and McLeod Trail South and Shanks and Crowfoot Terrace. You got the big screens, then you've got the huge screens, and then you've got Calgary's largest event screens. And on top of that, you've got your 475 bottles of Bud, your 550 Bud Light pints, you got your chicken wings, you got your food specials. Oh yeah, and every Sunday, Monday, and Thursday at Shanks, you can enter for your chance to win a trip for two to see a Sunday night NFL game in New York. The Cowboys and the Giants, air, hotel, tickets, spending money, and more, all included. Shanks on McLeod Trail South, Shanks in Crowfoot Terrace, your home for the NFL in Calgary. Big Show continues around the corner here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
Game 7 wins, Game 7 losses, coach hirings, coach firings. It's always important to you. It's always important to us. Calgary's only all-sports radio, Sportsnet 960. The questions you're asking, the answers you're craving. It's three burning questions on the Big Show, only on Sportsnet 960, The Fan.
All right, William, what do we got today?
Well, Pat, we'll start with the Calgary Flames. We saw it last night. Brian Elliott played 40 minutes and looked pretty good in that game. I know it's very, very early, but Pat, are we already maybe starting to see the difference of goaltending kind of shining through for the Flames right now?
I certainly think that you just... There were no bad goals let in by Brian Elliott last night. In the two periods he played, he made the stops that he needed to make. Now, it's not like Edmonton created a bevy of grade A scoring opportunities. It was pretty low event game in the first 40 minutes. But still, you know, the chances they did get, Elliott made the stops. When he was a couple of times out of position, he showed, you know, he was true to form in that guy's a battler. All the guy does is battle even when he's out of position or things aren't great, and he showed that. So I just think there were no bad goals allowed last night by Brian Elliott. And it's far too early to make any type of definitive judgment on 40 minutes mm-hmm. of a preseason game. But I certainly just think that you saw a guy that I don't think we're going to see a lot of bad goals let in this year. I just think that and how many games last year did Kari Ramo or Jonas Hiller or Joni Ordio let in a bad goal at a bad time to start a second yep. period or on the first shot of the game or something like that. I just don't think we're going to see a lot of that. Yes, he's going to let in bad goals. Henrik Lundqvist lets in bad goals, and every goal he does, they're not perfect all the time, but I don't think it's going to be something that we get used to this year like we did last year. And I think the first 40 minutes that we saw from Elliott in the Flames jersey kind of speaks to that. And on top of everything else, he's got the best pads in the National Hockey League, so that win wins him over regardless of how well he plays in my eyes.
Question number two, the situation going on with Winnipeg, and it's, you know, impossible for either one of us to predict how it's going to play out. But Pat, do you think this thing with Jacob Trouba and the Jets ends in a good way?
I don't think, well, I think that it will end in a way that makes sense for the Jets, because I really, and whether that's good or bad, I don't know. But I don't really see all that many differences in this situation than the Kyle Turris situation. And maybe there's not as much of a outward desire for Trouba to leave Winnipeg, because that's not what we're hearing right now. But I think it's part of it. I don't think Trouba wants to play in Winnipeg. I don't think he wants to be there right now. And then he can use the glut of right shot defensemen they have as an excuse, or he can and he can use, you know, the contract negotiations as an excuse. But I honestly believe a big part of this is he wants to play in a different place. And so if you're Kevin Cheveldayoff, the GM in Winnipeg, I think you go about it the same way Don Maloney went about his business, which I absolutely agreed on with Kyle Turris. And I don't think Trouba and Turris are all that dissimilar as players. They're both promising, they're both first round picks, but they've also not accomplished a ton in this league to this point. I think Trouba's maybe accomplished a little bit more than Turris had at this point, but still, play hardball if you're Cheveldayoff. Wait. You know, set your price. We want a commensurate player back. We want another top four young defenseman. And if you're Cheveldayoff, you know that you're probably not getting that in the very near future, but that's okay. You set your price. You're not going to waver on it. And I think eventually that forces Trouba to maybe come down off his demands, and maybe they sign him to a contract and then trade him, kind of like what happened with Turris. So I don't see a whole lot of differences between those two situations. So if Cheveldayoff and the Jets play hardball, which I think is the way they need to go about this, then I think they will end up being able to salvage this situation.
Last question is a choice of yours, Pat. Blackhawks or Wayne Gretzky? That's the only hints you get.
Oh, wow. Got to go with Wayne Gretzky.
Okay, the great one today was in Toronto to help out with the NHL centennial season, and they had announced that he's going to be the ambassador for the centennial year in the NHL, which is 2017. And today he was asked for his dream team, and he would go with Grant Fuhr in net. Bobby Orr and Paul Coffey would be his defensive pairing. And up front, he said he would go with a trio of Gordie Howe, Jean Beliveau, and Mark Messier. Do you disagree with any one of the great one's picks?
Well, yes, but it's so personal, right? Because, I mean, if you're Gretzky, of course Messier is going to be on your all-time team.
Yeah.
And of course Grant Fuhr is going to be on his all-time team. Of course Paul Coffey's going to be – yes, but no, you can't disagree with Orr. You can't really disagree with how. Béliveau's tough to disagree with. But, you know, and not to say Messier is one of the all-time greats, but is he one of the three best forwards of all time? I probably would have put Gretz or Crosby or, maybe a couple of other guys ahead. But – I mean, if you're Gretzky, those make sense. You won all those cups with Fuhr and Coffey and Messier. And, you know, Gordie Howe's your idol growing up. And it's tough to choose against Bobby Orr and tough to choose against Jean Béliveau. So, yes, would my group be different? Yes. I didn't play with any of these guys, though.
there's
different criteria that you're using. So I like the fact that, you know, with who we put out there. Because, you know what? That's kind of cool. So would I have a different group of my all-time six? Yeah, because Gretzky would be on it, and he didn't put himself in his. But
you know who
like
I am surprised he didn't put on there?
Curry?
Mario Lemieux.
Oh, Mario. Yeah, Lemieux and Curry both not on there. I'm a little surprised by, actually. Yeah, I mean.
And hey, it's only one line.
See?
So who knows?
See, I probably would have put Mario ahead of Messier. And that's not a knock on Mess at all. I would have done that myself.
Connor.
I like that.
Connor.
Yeah, hey, Connor, it's Mess. Welcome to Edmonton, man. That was a good final question. I'm glad I chose that one. Those are your three burning questions. Big Show is brought to you by the Comedy Cave, where every day $10 is what you're paying to get in. Every day. Tuesday, yes. Monday, no, because they're not open on Mondays. But Tuesdays through Sundays, always $10. That includes your marquee nights. That includes your Friday night late show. That includes your Saturday night late show. Always $10 at the Comedy Cave. Oh, and don't forget, today's the BOGO special at the Comedy Cave as well. You buy admission and dinner, you get admission and dinner for free. But always $10, even on the weekends at the Comedy Cave. And ComedyCave.com for reservations and tickets. Call 403-287-1120. This week, Patrick Keane is your featured performer. Comedy Cave proudly presenting The Big Show, which just happens to continue around the corner. We've got Flames preseason action to talk about. We're both going to make the case, Rob and I will, of how Europe will win the World Cup of Hockey. Well, one of those things was accurate.
Connor,
Big Show continues around. Hey, Connor, it's Mess. Big Show continues around the corner here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.